and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. What's going on, folks? How's everybody doing? Riley, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Are you?
Yeah, man.
Guess what? The mystery is over, my friend.
What?
I get a call from my wife yesterday.
Uh-oh.
She goes, hey, the package came back.
It came back?
The package that was mailed to me by priority mail, a 3-day priority mail the day before Memorial Day, which had some important stuff in it that I've been asking my wife what happened to it. I suspected foul play. But in deep in my heart, I suspect that she screwed up somehow.
Well, and, wait a minute. Now, you're going to blame it on her?
Dude, I just thought she might have, something went wrong. Maybe she didn't get the postage right because she didn't go to the post office. It had no tracker on it. She had priority mail envelopes at home. She put the postage on herself, mailed it out. There could have been a lot of mistakes. I didn't anticipate the mistake that actually did happen.
Well,
though.
What was it?
She mailed it to Mark Maron and then put the address of this building.
No, Mark Avenue.
Well, why don't you just tell everybody? Here come. Here's great. Hey, good morning. Oh, thanks, Riley, for telling everybody where we were. No, I'm kidding. No, but she didn't put Air America. She didn't put Care of. Mark Maron.
So, in other words, it clanged around office building.
I don't know.
For a week.
Probably.
And then went back.
Who is this guy, Mark Maron?
The sleeping security guy finally saw me. He said, boy, hey, you know what? We have to send this back where it came from.
Yeah, Riley's giving away the store this morning. So, it's Lee Park Avenue, and the security guards are already asleep. Always asleep down there.
Yeah, but the doors are locked. So
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good news, man. Good news. So how you feeling, Kalo? How's the teeth? Did you get any resolution on the teeth? Let me bring people up to speed. This is important stuff. Brendan McDonald, our producer, P.W. McDonald, comes in and says, hey, guess what? The health plan's going to cost me $10 a tooth to get my wisdom teeth extracted. In response to that, Kalo, the Costco host, says, $10? Mine costs $1,600 for 4 teeth. So now we've got there were some bad vibes all day yesterday. Have you got any closure on that?
No closure as of yet.
Yeah.
Although I have told the dentist, you know, the story, and the dentist is like, well, $10, that's just crazy talk. You know, no one pulls out her tooth for $10.
And did you say, I know what I'm on to, bastard. You took me for a ride. You took me for a little dental ride in your dental sucker mobile, didn't
there you?
You
go.
Close to saying that. But, yeah, I'm going to be talking to the health insurance.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that story
as it
unfolds. Morning Sedition, this show will broadcast live this Friday from New York Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street from 6 to 9 a.m. I'll be talking to Eric Bogosian, playwright and actor Eric Bogosian, New York City mayoral candidate, C. Virginia Fields. Comic Jim David is going to be there. Plus, we'll be giving away free coffee, tickets to see me June 25th at Bananas in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, on Saturday, June 25th. We'll have T-shirts, all kinds of things. Riley's going to be in Disney World. I just want to let people know that so you don't get there and you're like, where's Riley? What's happened? Riley will be in Disney World. It will be me alone at the mic with many friends coming by during the day.
I had a nightmare.
What do you mean you had a nightmare about Disneyland? What is Mickey Mouse going,
No, it was even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know if I want to talk about it.
All right, well, you think about it, and let's talk about some news. You decide. We'll let you fester about that.
It's
was that bad?
Yeah,
I mean, Disneyland in and of itself can be a nightmare, depending on how you look at it.
While I was there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's
and I'm walking
horrendous.
Around with a cell phone, calling back here, describing what's going on.
Oh, at least we get a good story out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be really more interesting is you could call us from our dream, from your dream. If Riley could call us from your dream in the next segment, that'd be amazing.
Hey!
We could do that. We've got the technology.
Possible.
So let's get into this story because it does affect this area. It does affect New Jersey to a certain degree. It obviously affects the country. It affects a lot of people. 25,000 jobs. General Motors is cutting 25,000 U.S. jobs because of something you speculated about a year ago, Riley.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, what would you say? They're overextending with this SUV idea. They really gambled on this, and it backfired.
Yes.
And now there's a lot of people out of work with nowhere to go, probably not much of a pension, and we're going to talk about a pension problem a little later in the show. But when we parse this story here, Riley.
Well, it's 25,000 jobs by 2008, and it's going to close a number of plants. They don't know how many. They're trying to trim costs. They say that the closings and job cuts should save about $2.5 billion a year. What's scary about this story, Mark, is there are a couple of things. Number one, they're blaming it on the lavish pensions that are given to retiring GM line workers. In other words, the regular blue-collar people that work for a living every day at these GM plants
right.
are the ones that are, you know, people are saying, well, it's because the costs are so high. Here's the real reason, ladies and gentlemen, as you wake up this morning, why GM is getting rid of 25,000 jobs. This is a story from a full year ago.
They blew it, yeah.
Yeah, they blew it. This is a senior General Motors executive
mm-hmm.
who said at the time, again, a full year ago,
yeah.
that hybrid compact cars like the Toyota Prius, quote, make no sense.
Yeah.
Now, the Toyota Prius, in addition to being one of the best-known and best-selling cars in the Toyota line, is also starting to make money. But General Motors, according to this article that was written in January of 2004, has no plans to try to answer the success of the Toyota Prius, according to Robert Lutz. I wonder if he's still got a gig. He's the GM Vice Chairman of Product Development. Now, instead of putting out hybrid cars, you know what they did?
Yeah.
They made hybrid SUVs and pickup trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what Americans wanted.
Well, you know, I guess it made sense in his head at the time. It was a gamble that didn't pay off, and now 25,000 people are out of work. It's unclear, you know, whether or not their pensions will pan out, whether or not they'll, you know, continue to have health coverage. This stuff becomes ambiguous for 25,000 people. Now, in New Jersey, where we're also losing a base down in Monmouth.
Fort Monmouth, yeah.
Depending on how many jobs are lost, the GM plant down there in Linden. It's in Linden, right?
Yeah, Linden.
You know, this could really take a toll on this on New Jersey state economy, certainly.
Yeah, it is going to take a toll on New Jersey's economy. These are blue-collar jobs that are not easily replaced. Mark, the problem here is that you're going to have a workforce of people, 25,000 people, who are going to have to work for Walmart wages, a lot of them, because there are just not these kinds of jobs available. There are not many of these of GM's competitors don't have union contracts like GM's. So the likelihood of these people finding work at the same salary they were making GM is negligible.
Now,
at best.
And, you know, when we talk about the pension issues in terms of, you know, what pensions are really worth in a few minutes, it's a very grim picture, and it has everything to do with Republican policy and the repercussions of that policy on working people. But first, I want to get into this tobacco lawsuit.
Oh, yeah.
So this has been going on for 6 years, Riley. They had all the evidence they needed to nail these guys and get this, what was it, like $130
billion.
And then out of nowhere, the Justice Department just says, I will take... Now, what the hell is that? I mean, obviously, we knew that the part of this administration, certainly part of the Republican Party, is owned and paid for by the tobacco industry. But, I mean, what the hell is that?
It's like Jesse Helms was still in the Senate or something.
They must be pretty damn powerful, obviously, to get that much of a break out of nowhere. No explanation after 6 years. Imagine the people that were fighting the case. Imagine the anti-smoking people. And when it was supposed to be money that was supposed to go into a sort of almost international cessation campaign.
Yeah,
correct?
It was supposed to talk people out of smoking, and that's probably what scared the big tobacco companies. What you have here, Mark, is an ongoing effort. Remember that 4 years ago, Ashcroft tried to scuttle. Now, mind you, folks, this is a prosecution that was brought by the United States government, and the representative of the United States government, the government's own lawyer,
mm-hmm.
tried to kill it back in 2002. Now, what you have going on now is that these people said, and they even stunned the tobacco, and they even stunned the defendants in this case.
Yeah.
By saying, well, no, we won't take $130 billion for cessation, but we'll only take 10. And by the way, that 10 is spread out over the next 5 years, only $2 billion a year.
So they get off the hook. And, you know, a lot of time, smoking has gone down in the United States, and they've you know, Philip Morris has changed the name of their company to Altria. They also make Kraft Foods. They diversify, but internationally, tobacco companies are still selling their product to children. They're still giving away cigarettes in third world countries to get people hooked. They're doing all the tactics. Now, this case, in case people don't know, was really about racketeering. It was about hiding for 50 years the fact that they knew tobacco and cigarettes were addictive, and they knew it was bad for you, but they kept that information from the public and in a campaign, a 50-year campaign to get America and the world hooked shamelessly on cigarettes. And, you know, I was hooked for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's a horrendous addiction.
It is.
In another story here, the polls come back. We've got a new poll here. For the first time, an ABC News poll shows that most people, half of the American public, more than half the American public, believes the fight in Iraq has not made the United States safer. And
yeah.
This is the first time this has ever happened. This that you know that 50. This is that most Americans, 3/4 of Americans, say the numbers of casualties in Iraq is unacceptable.
Yeah.
That, which is a huge number, which means that people are starting to wake up to what we've been saying here all along. You know, we went into the war, you know, based on a lie. The casualties are, you know, both sides, you know, God knows how many Iraqi casualties there are. There's about close to 2,000 American war deaths. There's been 80 in the last few months.
700 Iraqi deaths during the month of May mark. And what you have here is the American public essentially rejecting George W. Bush. Remember the other day we were talking about how rosy they've been trying to paint the picture here?
Yep.
Well, apparently the American people are not buying this rosy picture. They are starting to realize that George W. Bush got us into a quagmire under false pretenses. I don't care how many governments you try and form. I don't care how many troops you say you've tried to train. The bottom line here is you messed up, and you messed up badly, and the American people are on to you.
And also, when we return momentarily, we're going to continue this conversation because it's incredible what the American people think about the Republican Congress. Also, we're going to get into the failure of the broader failure of people's pensions. It's sort of a scary news day. That's all coming up next. It's 17 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Your vision is too important. For your free video, call 1-800-774-1683. That's 1-800-774-1683.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hiya.
It's Wednesday morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Looking at a recent, like yesterday, recent Washington Post ABC News poll. Apparently, 6 in 10 respondents said Bush and GOP leaders are not making good progress on the nation's problems. Of those, 67% blame the president and Republicans, while 13% blame congressional Democrats. For the first time, a majority, 55%, also said Bush has done more to divide the country than to unite it. See? Ha-ha. That's what they get for overreaching. That's what I say.
They have. What we're witnessing, Mark, is a wholesale swing in public opinion. Just a few months ago, these numbers were overwhelmingly in Bush's favor. In the low to mid-60s in terms of his trust issue, his trust level on Iraq, he was doing well. Just, you know, in the wake of the elections, February, March, he did well. Now, suddenly, it's May, June.
Isn't that weird how the truth creeps out and people start to feel it?
Yeah.
You know, if it gets out there enough. Let's try and get into this pension plan story because it's fairly difficult, but it's becoming revealed to me that apparently a lot of the nation's private pension plans have been going broke. I mean, we saw this with, or at least taking some hits. And I'm trying to make sense of this story because it seems to me that this is a more important story than Social Security. That if these pensions that are supposed to be protected by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corps, that itself is losing money. This is supposed to make up for the loss of money that any pension might have, is now itself losing money. So all these people that are banking on pensions or through private companies that they work for may not see, you know, half of that money.
Some of them may not see any of
this. This is a huge story because this seems to be, you know, what the whole Social Security debate is hiding, is that all of these private pensions, which is similar to what George Bush wants to put Social Security money into, a similar structure private pension, all these private pensions are going broke because CEOs have been hiding some information and been sort of cooking the books to a certain degree. Isn't that true?
Well, yeah. What they've done is essentially overvalued some of the investments that they've made because these pension funds make investments in the American economy.
So that means they tell the people that work at the company what the pension is worth based on a number that doesn't necessarily hold true over time.
No, and what we've seen happen is wild overvaluations in the late 1990s when the economy was doing really well and the stock market was doing really well. Well, the market hasn't done that well since.
Mm.
And what you see happening now is a total shortfall of the slightly more than 1,100 weakest pension plans in America, of 353 $1.7 billion. That's a serious case of the shorts. It's 27% higher than the shorts from last year.
And also, let's not forget that restructuring of companies, that, you know, when you have companies that are outsourcing a tremendous amount of jobs, that a lot of people that were once paying in are not paying in. So they aren't worth the same amount, because the amount of money coming into these pensions is not the same, because when you are outsourcing jobs, those people aren't paying into pensions, are they?
No. And see, where the government is falling short here, Mark, is that there are rules in place that are supposed to guarantee full endowment of these pension plans, and those rules have been ignored.
Mm-hmm.
People have looked the other way while year after year after year, and by the way, even some state government pension plans are having the same kinds of shorts. And you're talking about, you know, one of the things that people are really scared of is in the airline industry, when United, and we talked about this at the time,
mm-hmm.
when United was able to walk away from $9 billion in pension obligations, and of course it went to that Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and many of the pilots, okay, the guys who were at the top end of the vesting here, are going to make nothing.
It's unbelievable. This, alongside of the GM laying off 25,000 American jobs, these corporations, you know, lying about pensions and cutting people loose in terms of, you know, what their retirement, what they were banking on for their retirement. I mean, where does this leave working people? It's painful to see how you have a Republican administration who only sympathizes with corporate interests and really does not care about working people at all. And this is the trickle down of that type of ideology. When you pass legislation that disables people from declaring bankruptcy, when so many people are uninsured, when they can no longer make even lawsuits against you know, companies that have harmed them. I mean, where does it leave working people now with no pension and 25,000 people without jobs because of GM? I mean, what's going to happen? The repercussions of this administration, who the hell knows how many homeless people it's going to cause, how many deaths it's going to cause because of lack of concern for working people in this country.
And it's not smart politics. What's happened very quickly in Bush's second term is that Americans have seen through him and all of the nonsense
yeah.
that he sold us last year.
Some of you don't know Lawton Smalls, but he lives on Planet Bush, and he calls us usually later in the show. But we decided we were going to replay one of those calls so you people that don't know him can meet him and enjoy him. Also, some guy with a chainsaw made it through customs.
Yeah, how'd that happen? Next on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
D-D-D-D. Rumsfeld.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Rumsfeld.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Morning's Edition will broadcast live this Friday from New York Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street from 6 to 9 a.m. We'll have playwright and actor Eric Bogosian, New York City mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields, comic Jim David. Also, he also writes a column for The Advocate. We're also going to have some guests talking about the nature of the independent bookstore versus the big monsters.
Yeah.
Barnes and Nobles.
Yeah.
Yes, and the Amazons. The people who own the Strand are going to sit down and chat with me. You, of course, will be in Disney World. World where you're going to be frightened.
No, you know what? I wish I was at the Strand, because the Strand represents for me something really positive about New York.
It's like there's no place like it. It's a landmark. It's appeared in movies. It's an amazing place if you haven't been there. There's more books there than you can ever imagine, and they're completely disorganized.
Yeah, I know.
If you ever go in there to look
for,
if you're going in there to look for a specific book that's old, because they have new books, used books, collector's books, they got all kinds of books. But man, plan to spend a day.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to look through some stuff.
At least an afternoon.
In a minute, actually, coming up soon, you ever wonder whether or not, you know, just what does it mean? The FBI is going to expand powers to subpoena records without the approval of a judge or grand jury in terrorist investigations under the Patriot Act revisions approved Tuesday by the Senate Intelligence Committee. You ever wonder whether or not you are a terrorist, or whether or not you could be hauled in as a terrorist, or what is a terrorist, and how do you define that under these new Patriot Act provisions? I mean, the thing is that it's not clear, and we're going to talk to a guest who is going to clear that up for us. That's Ann Beeson, Deputy Legal Director of the ACLU. Because I get worried. You know what I'm saying, Riley?
You should get worried. We should all be worried.
Because they can come get you for any reason. They're going to broaden the power of that. Right now, what I want to do, before we talk about the guy who tried to get into this country with a chainsaw, a hatchet, a sword, a knife, a lightsaber, and apparently they confiscated this stuff, let him come on through up in Maine on the Canadian border, and then he went and killed a couple of people. But before we do that, allegedly, yeah. Did you see the guy? Anyways, before that, we want to introduce some of our listeners who listen at this hour to a guest we have frequently on our show, later in the show usually. This is a correspondent that we've developed a relationship with from Planet Bush. Let's hear that, Kalo. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone once again is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Hey, good morning, Mark. It was good meeting you Friday. Thought you'd be taller, though.
Okay, yeah.
At least you shaved.
All right, let me read you something,
my
friend. Okay, here's what Dick Cheney said about the Iraqi insurgents.
Dick Cheney.
Yes, listen to this. It's about the insurgents, Lawton.
Yep.
The level of activity that we see today from a military standpoint, I think, will clearly decline. Mm-hmm. I think they're in the last throes of the insurgency. Wow, come on.
Well,
come on.
And you were going to second-guess this administration. I guess you feel pretty stupid, don't you?
Oh, come on, stupid. What are you talking about? The last throes of the insurgency. Now, that's stupid.
Mark, the rats are headed for the hills, buddy. They're packing their tents. The circus is over. They've been abandoned by their ten-horned Muslim god.
Oh.
We shocking on them right on out of there. Or as Toby Keith likes to say, shocking y'all.
Oh, not Toby Keith. What is Shane even basing this on? It's completely nuts. He's got no proof on it.
His years of military service?
What are you talking about?
Vice President Dick, two-terms mandate Cheney's been in combat for so long.
What?
You can't really dispute his opinion on a deal like this.
Oh,
he was just over there in Fallujah in a tank last week.
Yeah.
Death in the eye.
What are you, crazy?
Every day.
What about this? Last month alone, car bombings and other attacks killed 80 U.S. soldiers and more than 800 Iraqis, Lawton.
800, huh?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that sounds about right.
What do you mean that sounds about right?
Well, isn't it obvious, Mark? Those are the kind of numbers you get just before the other fella calls it a day.
Oh, that's crazy.
There's 5 seconds left in the game. The insurgents are throwing up a Hail Mary pass.
Oh.
But since they're Muslims, the Virgin Mary's not going to give them that touchdown they need to win. Game over. Tear down the goalpost.
Buddy, listen to this. Listen to this, Lawton. Senator Joe Biden met with military commanders recently and afterwards said, quote, the idea that the insurgents are on the run and we're about to turn the corner, I did not hear that from anybody, end quote. What about that, huh? That's Senator Biden.
Mark, and what party does Senator Biden belong to?
He's a Democrat.
Thank you. That means the please disregard light is now lit.
Oh, come on.
Your left-wing attack machine's out of gas today, buddy.
Come on.
I run the Texaco station.
Oh, shit. You know what? I'm tired of it. I'm tired of your misinformation. Biden also says that the U.S. is at least two years away from viable Iraqi military.
Oh,
and it is no longer reasonable to consider boosting U.S. troops who are already strained after 2 years in Iraq. That's a quagmire, Lawton. I'm sorry to tell you. It's a quagmire.
Bush
and Cheney just keep lying because they know they failed, Lawton. They've made wrong moves every step of the way in this war, and now we're all paying for it. The insurgents aren't going away, and they're getting stronger. If anything, we're in the last throes of Bush, my friend, of Bush. And I'm not calling insurgents, but come on, wake up. What's the matter?
I once saw a baby buddy get hit by a car.
Oh, boy.
It wasn't quite that. It was just laying there bleeding on the pavement with his little pink nose twitching and his little fluffy tail quivering back and forth. Died in my arms.
Oh.
That's what last throws look like.
Oh, my God.
That buddy couldn't blow up no car. That's
for
damn sure.
What's the matter with you?
Dick Cheney took my rabbit.
Oh, my God. It's awful. Just take it easy, man. Would you, man, the bunny thing? Would you please? Please, please, Lawton. Oh, jeez. Yeah. You all right there? Wow. Wow.
Last one out of Iraq. Turn off the lights. That lady's singing, and it sounds like Patsy.
All right, great. Goodbye.
I'm going to see you Friday.
Goodbye, Lawton. You coming down the Strand?
I'm coming.
All right, man.
Get ready for that. God loves you. Deal with it.
All right, I'll try.
Deal with that.
Yeah. All right, that was Lawton Smalls from yesterday. He will be down to Strand with me. We'll be broadcasting live this Friday from New York Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street from 6 to 9. We'll have playwright Eric Bogosian, of course, Lawton Smalls, mayoral candidate, New York mayoral candidate, C. Virginia Fields, comic and advocate columnist Jim David, plus many other people, free coffee, T-shirts, keychains, you name it.
Swag, baby!
Now, dude, tell me about this guy. Gregory Dupree arrives at the U.S.-Canadian border crossing at Calais. Is it Calais? Maine? Calais, Maine. Carrying a homemade sword, a hatchet, a knife, brass knuckles, and a chainsaw stained with what appeared to be blood.
Mm-hmm.
And they let the guy through. They're like, hey, look, are you a magician or something? You're going to have to leave the act here. Are you a prop comic or what? What is that? What do you do with that? Hey, he had everything but a bomb in there. And they said, look, you're going to have to check the baggage. And he come on in. The guy was nuts. You could clearly see he was nuts. Blood on the chainsaw.
Alleged blood on the chainsaw. But see, this is important because they later found the bodies of a couple of people that he allegedly killed in his hometown in Canada.
And then didn't they say something like, there's no reason for us to suspect?
Yeah, we didn't know nothing.
We didn't. Wait, here's one hint. How about the homemade knife?
Yeah.
Here's another hint. How about the hatchet? Hey, maybe the brass knuckles should have
brass
been a giveaway.
You might have wanted to know exactly why he's bringing them in.
Maybe the chainsaw with blood on it would have been a giveaway that maybe the guy was up to something no good.
Well, hey, look, this is what our customs people say. Quote, being bizarre is not a reason to keep somebody out of this country.
How about having a chainsaw with blood on it? Am I wrong?
Hey.
That's weird. That's really weird that he had a homemade knife, a hatchet, and a chainsaw with blood on it. That guy's weird. Let him in.
Yeah, well, you know what? What ends up happening is they keep other people out of the country while they let people like this wacko in the country.
Thank God he wasn't a terrorist.
How do we know he wasn't a terrorist? I don't know.
Just
you
a
know,
murderer.
When they arrested him in Massachusetts, apparently, or actually when he went to court, he told the judge that he was affiliated with NASA and he was on his way to a Marine Corps base when they arrested him.
That's just bizarre. That's not crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm affiliated with NASA. This is a NASA chainsaw with blood on it. These are NASA.
NASA's got a line of brass knuckles.
Yeah, NASA issued
that,
brass knuckles.
Oh, Lord.
I don't feel any safer at all. And
no.
I'm a paranoid person.
Does Lou Dobbs know about this guy?
Lou Dobbs doesn't care if the guy's
I know, as long
Mexican.
As he's not Mexican. What is his name? Dupree? No, I guess not. He's coming from the other side, from Canada. But look, what it points out, Mark, is a continuing problem. And, you know, it ties directly into those polls. Numbers we were talking about before, about whether or not people feel the Bush administration and what it's done in fighting this war on terror have made Americans any safer at home. A story like this screams no to me.
I'll tell you, you know, and now with these new revisions to the Patriot Act, I'm a paranoid person in general, you know, but I write a lot of that off as just being sort of self-centered and a little weird in the head, you know. I mean, but you know, when we are out this show, you know, certainly at the beginning of this show, I used to get paranoid. I used to think, you know, somebody was going to hurt me. Even when we were at the City Bakery last week, I got concerned that a stalker would come out or somebody from the right. I'm usually afraid of the right more than I am of terrorists, oddly enough. But, you know, they apparently have been doing these planning scenarios where, you know, they do these training events where they train people to react, emergency people and military people, to react to terrorist situations. And apparently in these training activities, they have isolated four groups that they're supposed to be fictional, but they're not fictional groups. They call the outside enemy in these training scenarios the universal adversary.
Uh-huh.
And there are four groups that they created to categorize the universal adversary: foreign Islamic terrorists, domestic radical groups, state-sponsored adversaries, disgruntled employees. Now, domestic radical groups could be anti-war and civil rights groups. State-sponsored adversaries could be rogue states, unstable nations. Disgruntled employees could be Kalo. Now,
there you had to go there, didn't you?
But there's a point to be made that this is a fiction, that these are scenarios that they have invented to train, but how close is this to reality? And we're going to talk to a woman after the break, Ann Beeson. She's a deputy legal director of the ACLU, and we can talk about how much they're going to try to get rid of the Fourth Amendment almost entirely, it seems, with these new provisions that they're trying to get through on the Patriot Act and give the FBI almost unlimited search and seizure power, and also to classify whoever they want as being a terrorist. I mean, there's a group of people that are being tried shortly in New Jersey, who supposedly accused of violently protesting a company that used animals in experimentation. Now, there were terrorist definitions that applied to this before 9/11, and I'm looking forward to discussing with her just how those old terrorist definitions have been integrated and whether or not if you and I actually make an announcement about a civil disobedience, a protest, maybe downtown. Let's say the thing gets out of hand, and what's to stop them from arresting us as conspirators?
I'm not going to say anything. I'm only kidding.
But it's a good question.
No,
right?
It is. It's a legitimate question because these kinds of tactics have been used by the government before.
Yeah.
Remember that.
Yeah, you'll bring that up in just a second. That's Ann Beeson coming from the ACLU coming up next.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
Fifty-one past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Just a little while, we're going to talk about how Democratic infighting is rising its
ugly
head again in terms of the pile-on on Howard Dean, who has guts as compared to a lot of other ones. But right now, joining us to discuss increasing evidence that the U.S. government is using anti-terrorism tactics to investigate political groups is Ann Beeson. She is the Associate Legal Director of the ACLU, and she joins us on the phone from New Jersey. Good morning, Ann.
Hi.
Hey, I got a question for you. I'm freaking out a little bit. I got this thing right in front of me about a recent report of the Homeland Security Council entitled Planning Scenarios, describing in minute detail, all the different types of groups that may be considered terrorists. And then I see that the FBI is trying to, broaden, is going to have more power under the new Patriot Act. I mean, could I be considered a terrorist, Ann? Could we be considered conspirators if we were to announce a protest that went wrong?
Unfortunately, the FBI's recent actions, indicate that, yes, you could be. Basically, terrorism has become the new communism in the sense that, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, what the FBI and local police would do is to, say that they were trying to root out communism and use that excuse to go and investigate political and religious groups and did that for years and years. And, of course, that led to what we thought were a lot of safeguards put in place when the American public found out and, said, wow, we don't want the FBI doing this routinely. Unfortunately, John Ashcroft broke it all down.
So definitely the Fourth Amendment is clearly at stake. The First Amendment is at stake. And also the idea that they can use – now, the definitions of terrorism in certain instances on a domestic level have been around for a long time, in terms of this animal rights activist group that are being tried in New Jersey. But now with the Patriot Act, they can all just lump it together and create an enemy of the state scenario, but it's really just an enemy of the established power under this administration, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. And they don't even need the new Patriot Act powers, frankly, to engage in this kind of surveillance. I mean, what they're doing is routinely, visiting public places, infiltrating political groups, small groups. I mean, groups like Peace Fresno, the Michael Moore film, all over the country.
They just show up and say, hey, how you doing? Just want to let you know we're outside watching.
No, they don't do that. I mean, it's worse than that. If they did that, at least, there'd be the knowledge that they were present. What they do is they pretend that they're John Brown who lives down the street who wants to join the, Dandelion Peace Center for Colorado. And it's only later that that the group finds out, when the person disappears that this person was likely.
They've been punked.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Ann Beeson, they did this during the late 60s, early 70s to black groups under the guise of COINTELPRO. But, there are a lot of Americans who believe that this sort of thing is necessary to root out terrorism, and it appears to have some public popular support. How does an organization like the ACLU convince the average American that it's not cool to give up some of your rights in the name of domestic security?
Well, here's why. Because it's a totally ineffective way to track down the real terrorists. I mean, here's how. You know, and that's what people have to understand. I mean, you know, we want police to protect us from real criminals and real terrorists, but do we really want the resources and the money that are established to fight, you know, crime and terrorism to be used to routinely monitor, you know, these peace groups all over the country? It's a waste of money, and it's not an effective way to actually make us any safer.
But isn't it really their plan, though? Isn't it really always been the plan of the Republicans over the last 30 years to completely stifle dissent in this country in relation to their policies and the way they want to guide this particular civilization? I mean, it just seems to me that, you know, they're using this to engage the sort of final end of their plan. They've already, you can't protest without being barricaded five blocks away from what you're protesting already.
No, that's absolutely true. And of course, what you see on this list from Homeland Security is that, you know, there are many groups out there that are equally radical in their politics and in their tactics who are not being watched.
Like what? Like extreme right organizations?
Extreme
Aryan
right organizations. They're sort of notably missing from some of these recent lists from Homeland Security.
And they're the only ones that actually committed an act of terror, you know, that killed hundreds of people in Oklahoma. I mean, that guy, why am I spacing out? Timothy McVeigh was associated with these exact groups you're talking about that are not being under surveillance.
Right, right.
How forthcoming has the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security been in terms of your request for documents under the Freedom of Information Act?
Yeah, we have filed FOIA requests on behalf of almost 150 different organizations and groups all over the country, small local groups and also big national groups. And we have so far gotten, you know, about 20 pages, and this has been pending for months. Now, we just about a month ago filed a lawsuit in Washington, D.C. to try to, you know, force the FBI to speed up its processing of some of the documents. And we're hoping that some of the other ones will begin to just come out on their own. In other words, that they'll begin to comply. But they've been very slow, which, of course, makes you wonder, well, what are they trying to hide? I mean,
everything.
And the documents that they have released are not particularly reassuring, because what they show is that they confirm, for example, that last summer the FBI sent out these, you know, members of their joint terrorism, you know, so-called joint terrorism task force to interview, aggressively interview and question kids who were planning to attend the political conventions.
That's awful. You got to keep up the fight for us here. We really appreciate you coming on the show, and we appreciate what you're doing. We'd like to talk to you again sometime.
Sure.
Thanks a lot, Ann Beeson from the ACLU. She's Associate Legal Director. Wow, that's just...
Creeps me out. I'm going to the men's room.
They can get you in there, right?
I know.
So we're going to come back and talk about Howard Dean and how... Six past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's morning sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and, of course, lurking conservatives. This Friday, Mark Riley's going to be in Disney World.
Hey.
I will be broadcasting live from New York Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street from 6 to 9 a.m. We're going to have actor and playwright Eric Bogosian down there, New York mayoral candidate, C. Virginia Fields.
Mayorial.
Yes, mayorial. Comedian Jim David, who's also writing columns for The Advocate, very funny Southern man. Plus, we'll be giving away free coffee, other cool stuff, including a raffle. There's going to be a raffle for two tickets, plus transport to New Jersey.
Yes.
That's right, folks. You can go to Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, and come see me at Bananas on Saturday, June 25th. How about winning tickets to that?
Hey.
And what did she win, Mark? Two tickets to New Jersey.
Hey, don't mock the Garden State.
Dude, I was born there.
Oh.
My entire family comes from New Jersey. My grandfather's family was in Elizabeth. My father's parents were in Jersey City. I was born in Jersey City. I was born in the same hospital as Joe Pantoliano, who we had on the show a couple weeks. Remember that? All right. So for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's morning's edition, Cliff Notes. General Motors plans to cut 25,000 jobs. GM Chairman G. Richard Wagner Jr. said the closings and job cuts should save about $2.5 billion a year. Wagner added, quote, it was either that or eliminate my job. But then who would announce stuff like this? I sided with important announcements, end quote. President Bush's advisor suggested he never apologize to Muslims. Besides sending the president the John Wayne movie, she wore a yellow ribbon to pattern himself after. Bush advisors also sent the Nazi documentary Mein Kampf, which Bush called the feel-good movie of the summer. Bush said, when it comes to North Korea, I got another movie line ready for them, too. Quote, don't worry, Jake. It's only Chinatown, end quote. Mayor Michael Bloomberg said, New York's failure to secure a West Side Stadium, quote, let America down. I don't know how we're going to face all those disappointed kids in Alabama and Idaho and New Mexico. What have we done? What have we done? As a partial substitute for having the Olympics, New York official may instead just paint a giant target on Manhattan. Many New York City residents were not eager to host the Olympics. Some said if they wanted to see people from all over the world compete, they would just throw a 20 on the floor of the F train. Today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. So GM is cutting 25,000 jobs. The only manufacturing job left in this country is to manufacture wealth for the ruling classes. Wake up, sheeple. Blue collars are being replaced by slave collars.
Oh.
Whew, those are your morning tradition cliff notes. Wow. So Howard Dean, under attack from, of course, Democrats. Apparently, yeah. The three of the top fundraisers for the Democratic National Committee have resigned for one reason or another, some because they're critical of Dean, one because he's critical of Dean, and the other two because they said they got other things to do. But the criticism of Dean around this issue is that he's reaching out too much to regular people, to grassroots efforts like he did with his own campaign over the Internet. Getting people involved on a grassroots level means getting regular people reinvigorated and excited about the Democratic Party. People who are criticizing Dean saying he's not paying attention to the big money donors. Well, I think I'm all on board with Dean's policy because those donors are going to be there anyways. It's the people that have regular jobs, living regular lives, that have to be familiar and feel part of this party. The donors are going to be there 2 years from now, 1 year from now, and it seems like he's still making just as much money, if not more, than Terry McAuliffe did in the same amount of time.
Well, yeah. The problem is that the Republicans are making a heck of a lot more. Right now, the Republicans have raised $42.6 million to the DNC's 18.2 or 18.6, depending on who you talk to.
Is that unusual?
It is not totally unusual, but the Democrats' hopes were raised by the fact that they raised almost the same amount of money as the Republicans during the last election cycle. But they are the party out of power. You do kind of have to take that into consideration. But this is also, Mark, a fight for the soul of the Democratic Party between Howard Dean and his vision for the Democrats, and congressional Democrats who don't share his vision.
And their vision
like Joe
for themselves.
Biden. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're worried about electability. And in the end, Howard Dean will be judged the same way every other DNC boss will be judged, and that will be by the results of elections. Howard Dean's big test is going to come up next year, and it will come in the form of people looking as to whether or not the Democrats can cut into this Republican margin in either the House or the Senate. Now, some people will argue, well, if they can't raise the money, then they're not going to be able to be competitive. And to some extent, that may be true. But if you look at the polling data we discussed last hour, where so many Americans, and particularly independents, who went for Bush during the last election, many of them are now becoming quite dissatisfied both with Bush and the Congress. Howard Dean's challenge and the people who criticize him's challenge is to get those people out to the polls and voting Democratic.
Right. Well, that means talking about Democratic issues, talking about jobs, talking about how the Republican administration, how their policies have screwed over the working people of this country, not having infights because, Howard Dean makes a comment, which, quote, never made, he's talking about Republicans, they never made, some of them said many Republicans have never made an honest living in their lives. Now, when I read that, I didn't think he was talking about every Republican or even working people. I automatically went right with the people that are in Congress, with the people that that are making a living off of other people's backs, off of exploiting people and denying them their freedoms in some respect.
Yeah, and then, you have people saying, well, this is not what the party, Howard Dean's opinion is. You don't have to wash that laundry out in public, folks. I don't understand why these people don't realize that when the Republicans have beefs, they take them behind closed doors. Instead, you got Biden and John Edwards and the rest of these guys piling on Howard Dean like he had a football on the 10-yard line.
Yeah, and they sort of manage their emotions. I mean, Dean's an emotional guy. He's he's prone to say things that are on his mind. He's very human. He's sort of, you know, organically passionate. And this, I think, frightens people. Like Joe Biden, like John Edwards on some level, who are very orchestrated in the way they deliver their feelings.
Well, see, the other thing is the donors that they're talking about here like to feel as though the party apparatus will, stay in touch, will stay in contact, will be sensitive to their needs, whatever those needs are going to end up being.
Yeah, when they put a lot of money into it, they don't want to think that some loose cannon's going to blow it.
Yeah, but see, the question of whether or not the Democrats are going to be able to translate the nation's disaffection with the other party into votes and into Democrats getting elected in the Congress and eventually to the presidency of the United States. Those are the litmus tests for both Howard Dean and the people who criticize him, especially a guy like John Edwards, who appears to be ramping up for another presidential run.
Well, you know, John Edwards is, as appealing as he may be in some respects, you know, is a little, he's a little controlled. You know, he's got this working class line. He's got this working people line, which I think is fine, but I don't think he needs to be arguing with Howard Dean, who's obviously going to be the energized, sort of passionate heart of the Democratic Party if they let him be that. You know, they just have he scares them because they're like, how do we manage this guy? And the truth of the matter is the people they need to be talking about are going to be the 25,000 people that GM's going to put out of work.
Well, see, the worst case scenario here, Mark, and this is the nightmare that a lot of Democrats are looking at as a possibility, is that this rift will widen and that the congressional Democrats will attempt to distance themselves from the DNC and from the party apparatus because of Howard Dean. That is a prescription for disaster. Remember, you heard it here first.
Okay, but why can't they be political? Why are they going to feed into what the Republicans want Democrats to do and to, you know, allow the Republicans to increase a distance within Democrats by our own infighting, by Democrats' own infighting, when, you know, really what we needed to be talking about is General Motors is cutting 25,000 U.S. jobs, all right? There are layoffs they're closing the base at Monmouth just in New Jersey. There's also a GM plant in New Jersey. Now, these are the people that the Democrats need to be talking to. These are the people that Howard Dean needs to be reaching out to, that if any of them, John Edwards, whoever the hell wants to, can reach out and start to give these people some hope and start to show them that Republican policy has caused what the trouble that they are going through right now.
Well, what they're going to have to do is lock a bunch of these guys into a room and get them to straighten out their beefs and come out with a united front so that they speak with one voice, at least in the minds of the American people.
That's right. We got the iNews coming up next, so stay with us. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now, 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Hey, 20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hiya.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We'll be talking to Craig Newmark from Craigslist shortly about a new plan that he has for citizens journalism, for using Craigslist in a new way. I'm very excited to talk to him. He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Also, we're talking now about Howard Dean and John Edwards and the publicized rift. Can we take this call? Gabe, listening to WAVZ in New Haven. What's up, Gabe?
Hey, Gabe.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to weigh in a little bit. I'm a big Howard Dean fan, but I saw recently a blog post on John Edwards' website, which I believe is oneamerica.com.
I read that. That's what I was responding to. I thought that, you know, it seemed sort of political and disingenuous. I didn't think I read that as well, but I still think that, you know, the way he handled Dean in that piece was sort of a little bit dismissive, and then he just set out his own agenda.
Well, I would say political, yes. I don't think disingenuous. because I think Howard Dean and John Edwards agree on the whole One America argument.
Okay.
I just think that he, because he's running for president and not running the DNC, needs to be a little bit more, I guess, I don't know, I guess he would consider it polite, although I think both voices
political.
Are important for the Democrats.
Yeah, I understand.
Absolutely, but I think that it's only a semantic argument about whether Howard Dean said Republicans don't work hard, but as opposed to Senator MBNA from Delaware, they mostly agree on that Democrats are the party of work.
Senator MBNA.
MBNA.
Thanks for your call, Gabe.
Thanks, Gabe.
Yeah.
He'd be talking about Biden down there.
I understand what he's saying. And I understand that, you know, that there's a certain amount of tact that has to be taken care of when you are a presidential candidate and looking that far ahead. But, I mean, I can read some of this right now. This is, we agree, working Americans let down by the Republican Party. This is from John Edwards from the blog. And he just basically says, here we go. Of course, I didn't. Okay. What a flap has arisen over a disagreement about the way something is said. I was in Nashville over the weekend thanking the good people of Tennessee who supported the Democratic presidential ticket this year when I was asked whether I thought that it was fair to say that people who were Republican hadn't done a good day's work. Of course, I didn't think so, and I said that. I don't think our DNC chair, Howard Dean, would put it that way again if asked either. I disagreed with him, and I said so, and I want to be clear, I would have to say so again if I were asked again. Now, that's from John Edwards' blog. Well, you know, I just think that what he's doing is not putting Dean into context either. I specifically got the feeling that Dean was not talking about all Republicans. I got the feeling that he was playing to the heart of the Democratic Party and those of us who understand what he's saying, who says that, you know, Republicans, by and large, are just, you know, living off the backs of people who work very hard and exploit those people.
See, what troubles me about this is, Mark,
yeah.
Howard... John Edwards could have handled this very differently, and I think in a much smarter way. And I'm not trying to knock the guy at all, but I think that if someone says to you, do you think it's fair that someone says that Republicans have never worked a day in their life? I would say, well, I haven't seen the quote.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see what the man actually said, and then I'll respond to it maybe.
I think that Dean's just playing on a certain passion that some liberals and some Democrats have about the way that the Republican Party is really for and about corporate, you know, corporations. It's really for and about exploiting people and putting working people at a disadvantage. I completely got that immediately from reading what Howard Dean said, and I thought that John Edwards' response to it was a centrist response, and I don't believe that necessarily that the center exists, and I believe that, you know, all of us, you know, I mean, Democrats and liberals alike are trying to, you know, figure out a solution to help, you know, working people, especially
yeah.
the ones that are being
But see,
exploited.
How come you were able to glean that, but John Edwards wasn't? John Edwards said, well, I wouldn't, you know, I don't think Howard would have said it that way if he was asked again. How come you were able to parse that and John Edwards, at least publicly, was not?
Well, he's running for president, and
oh,
publicly
you're
he's
not?
Trying.
Oh,
no. Well, Kate Edwards is going to be on our show tomorrow with John Rockefeller.
So you think?
Yeah.
No.
Well, all right. We'll talk to. We got time for an iNews? Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
All right. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out what they're saying. That's why we got the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's kick it up. From the New York Times, downsizing at General Motors comes as no surprise to workers. Downsizing at General Motors comes as no surprise to workers. Translation, most recent one-year contracts offered 48 weeks of vacation. All right. From ABC News, Tony Blair wins kind words from Bush. Tony Blair wins kind words from Bush. Translation, Bush's kind words include, who's a good dog? You are. Yes, you are. All right. From Associated Press, ability to orgasm may be genetic. Ability to orgasm may be genetic. Translation, moms say ability to fake orgasm also inherited. There you go. All right. So, you want another one? here's one. Okay, let's do it real quick. Here's one. Yeah, let's turn the machine back on. All right, what am I doing? Oh, yeah, Tony Blair wins kind words from Bush. Tony Blair wins kind words from Bush. Translation, he was so nice afterwards, Blair tells rape counselors.
Oh, Lord.
Are you going to do that live again at the Strand? Oh, good. So
by popular demand, are you kidding me?
Brendan McDonald, by popular demand at the Strand Bookstore, where I will be with myself, because Riley, Disney World. Going to Disney World.
Hey, my daughter gets out of school. She wants to see Disney World. We're going.
Yeah. So I'll be at the Strand Bookstore here on 12th Street from 6 to 9.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a plan, you know, which theme parks to go to first, like MGM or Epcot?
Absolutely not. My wife is handling all that business.
We're going to get into Riley's trip to Disney World in a little while, and also the dream he had. Many of you know Craigslist is basically the classified section of the entire universe and internet.
Yeah.
And now he's going to get involved in what's being called citizen journalism and sort of expanding what it is that we've grown to know Craigslist as. And he will be with us in a few minutes, so stay tuned for Craig Newmark. Next, here on Air America Radio.
Boarding Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Mainstream media, to the extent that they have any will to do that, they're afraid to challenge.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We will be at the Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street from 6 to 9 a.m. this Friday with actor Eric Bogosian. We're going to have New York City mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields, comic Jim David, plus giveaways. There'll be coffee and bagels, and you can win tickets to see me performing live at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, and we'll drive you there. Huh? What a deal. How many New Yorkers have been to Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey? That's all I'm saying. Right now in our studio Well, I'm sure you know what Craigslist is. Craigslist is basically the classified section of the entire internet, the entire planet at this point. You can get an apartment, a date, a car, or pretty much anything. Now the guy who redefined classified ads is going to try to redefine the rest of your newspaper. Craig Newmark, founder of Craigslist, is pushing for something he calls citizen journalism on his site, and he's with us now in studio. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
Good morning.
I'm very happy to have you here, and I'm assuming, maybe wrongfully so, that the reason that you're getting involved in journalism is because of how mainstream journalism, not even biased journalism, shamelessly and without any responsibility plays into Republican frames constantly.
Not so much focused on one part or the other.
Right.
But there's some big problems right now, which makes it a lot easier for people to get scammed on a political basis. That's happened recently. And better coverage, more follow-up, more fact-checking helps us see what's going on.
Well, this is one of these stories. We just picked a few stories from yesterday. Like, Yale grades portray Kerry as lackluster student. So he releases his academic records. And there was speculation that the reason he didn't release these records before is that it had some implications about his military service. All right, now they compare him and Bush, and apparently they were both bad students. And look at the picture they pick of Kerry. You can't see this, obviously, if you're listening to the radio, but he looks like Frankenstein. I mean, it's a horrendous picture. Bush looks all svelte and clean, like here. But the real story is they buried this. I guess this would be called burying the lead, is that the real story to me is that the military records remain the same. So everything they swag carry for that was, you know, proven to be a lie before is still a lie, yet they don't even mention that.
Well, there's a lot of problems. I just read moments ago in the Times that there's some big conflicts of interest regarding the Tom DeLay investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not being covered widely, and the story may disappear by tomorrow. But we need it to follow it up on.
How's it going to work? You know, how are you going to use Craigslist to do this? You know, is this going to spread out into local markets? How do you see it? So how do you envision it?
We don't know what we're doing.
Okay,
and
good.
Right now,
that's great.
Just on a personal basis, I'm looking into things, encouraging some of the efforts going on that may lead into this.
Okay.
First, right now, mainstream media, in many respects, does a great job. They have a lot of good infrastructure, foreign bureaus, fact checkers, that kind of thing. What I'd like to see, and it may not involve Craigslist at all, will be a lot of people who report little bits and pieces of the news, reinforcing what people are seeing, doing research, doing fact checking, that
abroad,
kind of thing.
Abroad, in different parts of the world?
everywhere.
Mm.
Right now, the best, most in-depth reporting on some U.S. issues has come out of Korea, a citizen journalism site called Oh My News.
Hmm.
Those are the folks who dug into the character of Condoleezza Rice's testimony before the 9/11 Commission. They looked into her statements that there was no plan for countering terrorism before 9/11. They found that there was a plan, that she knew about it, and acted on the plan afterwards. But she said, possibly under oath, that there was no plan.
You mean she lied? Committed perjury?
That seems to be the case. If she was under oath, well, you got to draw your own conclusions.
Mm. You know, Craig Newmark, it strikes me that when you look at journalism in general, certainly in terms of the mainstream, you're looking at different media. You're looking at print on the one hand. You're looking at what's left of broadcast journalism in radio and television. And it dawns on me that the kind of citizen journalism you're talking about could also involve both radio and television. If you start cobbling together, for example, public access television, there is certainly a lot of unrealized potential if the government ever gets off the dime with low-power FM radio. I know we're not supposed to talk about that sort of thing on the commercial, on the commercial side. But how can all of these things come together to make a thriving community media?
Well, people are trying to do that in a number of ways. One is the kind of website which starts gathering news from different pieces and where people can somehow express their opinion of the quality of the reporting and how important the story is. People are starting to come up with reputation mechanisms, both for the publishers involved and for the people producing stuff. Another notable effort is Al Gore's Current.TV.
Mm-hmm.
It has potential. No one knows how it's going to shake out, and me, I'm just screwing around. I'm just an amateur at this. I'm not a newsman. I'm not really an activist. I'm a customer service rep for mm-hmm. Craigslist, and this helps me fight scams. And I figure maybe all I do is make some noise about it, accelerate this whole thing, and then maybe if I'm smart, I stop talking.
Well, let me ask you, Craig. You know, a lot of criticism around blog reporting is that, you know, how do you determine credibility? You know, what's the barometer for integrity? And also another question along those lines is there a way that hopefully we'll get to a point in your vision of how this would work where you get a sort of a place where everybody grows to learn that, you know, that's where the truth really is? Like, it seems to me there's a lot of foraging that has to take place.
Yeah, no one knows how that's going to happen.
Mm.
People are starting to build mechanisms by which, let's say, people who are talented amateurs or semi-professionals
mm-hmm.
can start to figure out, you know, what are the consistent sources of quality news? Who are the people who we don't know yet, who are investigative reporters that do a good job that we don't know about?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I do think we're going to need professional journalists, professional editors to be involved. And they hopefully will nurture people who are just coming out of nowhere, who can do really good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Gilmore is trying that. His experiment, Bayosphere, mm-hmm. out in the Bay Area, is just starting. Jeff Jarvis in New York City is experimenting with some new stuff.
We know Jeff.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
What is the Bayosphere?
Bayosphere is Dan's first attempt at trying to figure out how to do collaborative journalism, mostly focusing on technology in the Bay Area. At least that's what he knows, and he has a lot of contacts in that area.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's say that what you're thinking about works to its logical conclusion and works perfectly. Do you think it will have the effect of either energizing mainstream journalism, or do you think it might end up devaluing mainstream journalism?
I think the citizen journalist stuff and conventional journalism will merge and blur together, and people are going to work together. Because if you're an investigative reporter, a professional one, looking into a story, if you have maybe 100 people looking out for details for you, maybe some new stuff will come out. Maybe we'll get some whistleblowers talking about what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
We need a lot of those out of Washington right now.
Sure. I think what the great benefit of what you're talking about is that if some real, it provides an outlet for people with courage in investigative reporting to report. And if those reports get legs, and as you said, if enough people get involved and the sources are valid, that you can make an impact on the cultural if it makes an impact culturally in the big scale, you know, in that all of a sudden that's where you get your credibility.
That's what I'm hoping for. It's a cliche, but maybe the truth will set us free, whatever the truth is. I don't know.
If you can find it.
Yeah.
It's not too complicated to get to.
Greg, I just want to get your opinion on this. How do you turn a good writer into a citizen journalist? Because they're not the same things. How does someone make a transition?
I don't know, but that's why I'm talking to people who do know, whereas my focus maybe on a day-to-day basis has more to do with, well, dealing with misbehaving apartment brokers in Manhattan. That kind of thing.
What, they have misbehaving apartment brokers in Manhattan?
I've heard of one or two.
So let's talk about the some more general questions about Craigslist. So you're a customer service representative, is that what he says? Now, you must deal with, what is the strangest thing you've seen come across Craigslist? Have there been cases where you're just like, oh, that's got to go. Wasn't the Army just trying to recruit translators, Arabic translators on Craigslist?
I heard rumors about that. I think I saw them through Wonkette or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't really know. What I do day to day is about as mundane and actually boring as you could imagine.
Well, great. That sounds like good radio.
Why, thank you.
What do you got?
Yeah. But the deal is that, frankly, my biggest single project has to do with apartment brokers here.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes they pull things like bait and switch, or failure to disclose properly who they are. While I'm in Manhattan, my hobby is to, while I'm walking around, I'll drop into brokerages that I recognize.
From Craigslist?
Yes. Uh-huh. And that always causes a few moments of entertaining panic, followed usually by photography.
Oh.
Really?
So now they're going to have they're going to actually have a picture of you and post it on your own website and make you know everyone, all the brokers are going to know who you are.
That's entirely possible, which isn't too bad for a guy like me who may or may not exist.
Well, I think, you know, you do exist. I see you, don't I? You have a great...
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You started to make me nervous.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you got a lot of fans around this office because of your integrity in terms of not selling out and realizing that, you know, Craigslist is what it is, and it is enough as what it is, and that you haven't taken any big money from people who wanted to buy you out, and that's just because why?
It's a matter of values, as they say.
Good for you.
How much do you need?
Exactly.
Speaking as a nerd, since I don't buy a new flashy car every few years, you know,
what kind of car are you driving?
I drive the older Prius.
Did you get it on Craigslist?
No, you can't get Priuses anywhere but the dealership.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you can actually, but it's really hard, and life is complicated enough sometimes.
A black market for Prius.
Well, is it because they're not making a lot of them, or is it because
people who get them do love them, and frankly, it is a really good car, and I just wish it was more available.
Yeah. Now I got to ask you a couple questions about the Prius because I'm probably in the market for a new car. How many miles does it get? I mean, is it fascinating how much mileage you get out of it? Because gas is so expensive.
I'm getting, along with the friends who use my car more than I do.
Oh, you just lend your car out?
I lend it out.
Can I borrow it?
Sure. Oh, okay. But I'm getting about 40.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So you just lend your car out to whoever wants to drive it?
Oh, I lend it out to a couple of close friends, one of whom will be picking that from the airport tomorrow.
Oh, okay. All right, so that's the deal. It goes both ways. All right, so I'm going to be in San Francisco in a few months.
You got it now, Craig.
Can I drive the car
around? Oh, sure, Mark.
Thanks. But I'll drive around with you in it. We'll go have some lunch or something. You want it?
Lunch is good.
Because I met you, the last time I met you, you were in the back of a comedy room on a night when there was like four people there, and I was flopping around and floundering and screaming and yelling. And then that was the first night I met you, and you said, I enjoyed it.
That was pretty good. And actually, we met at a gig in San Francisco several years ago.
At Cobb's?
One of the Christmas time kind of things.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So this is, well, it's great seeing you again. And now next time I come to San Francisco, we're driving around in your Prius.
Oh, sure.
Craig Newmark, founder and customer service rep for Craigslist.com. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Coming up next, we have the War on Brain. So stay with us. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air. And online. MorningTradition.com. Air America Radio.
Hope. For this wonderful free tape, call 1-800-550-6146. That's 1-800-550-6146.
51 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. Come down and see me do this broadcast live Friday at New York Strand Bookstore with Eric Bogosian, mayoral candidate, Chief Virginia Fields, comic Jim David. Riley's going to be in Disney World. Maybe you should call us. Yeah, you'll never do that. I know you're not going to call us.
I'll be hot on the trail of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
All right.
I don't know.
Good for you. Every week, or maybe it's a small world. Every week, we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, San Francisco, California, site of Alcatraz. Former prison to hundreds of hardened felons stuck in a life of crime. And the Haight-Ashbury, modern-day prison to hundreds of deadheads. Stuck in a lifelong tape loop of trucking. Last week, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, after seeing his poll numbers shrink faster than his steroid-laden nard sack, took a surprise offensive against global warming. Repudiating the White House position on climate change and threatening George Bush's dreams for the upcoming rapture. In a speech before hundreds of business and environmental leaders at the United Nations World Environment Day, or UNWED, Schwarzenegger announced he wants to cut California's greenhouse gas emissions by more than 80%. Get this, over the next 50 years. Whoop-de-doo! 50 years, great, that's reassuring. I'll be dead by then, and my children... Okay, who am I fooling? My friend's children will be wearing gas masks and fighting mole people for fresh water and dwindling supplies of rat niblets. Thanks, Arnold. Now, I'm not trying to argue that this mutated alchemist doesn't have a clear understanding of science. After all, he turned his body into a lab years ago. It's his record of environmentalism I take issue with. Let's examine this record in Arnold's own words. Don't be economic greedy, men. The best activities for your health are pumping and humping. Hey, waitress, I want to see your vagina. Bring it back to me for inspection. And, of course, the immortal, Mars needs air. Mars needs air, indeed. La belle esprit he is not, people. For like the dangerously unpredictable automaton he so brilliantly portrayed in those soft porn B-movies, the Dominator has seemingly joined the side of good. But the subplot is even more diabolical. While play-acting the progressive, this crockish myrmidon continues to spew out anti-union rhetoric, turning against the very technicians who assembled his disparate parts into the retarded Hercules he is today, feared by waitresses and elevator passengers alike. It's unfortunate, Herr Gropenfuhrer. I'm so clever I can't even say my own words. Herr Gropenfuhrer doesn't even have the presence of mind to try to cut pollution while we're still alive. Like maybe using his fleet of Humvees to transport Maria's latest plastic surgery clippings to nearby rendering plant. Hey, there's a glue shortage, people. That's all I'm saying. Until next time, I'll leave you with the inspirational words of the Golden State's new environmental governor. I hope you'll have enough room for my fist because I'm going to ram it into your stomach. And that's today's dispatch from the War on Brains.
Oh, thank you, Mort. That was great. That was inspirational.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the...
Lagina.
Yes! That's what I was going to say. How'd you know?
I know you enjoy the Lagina.
I like the impression. I thought that was great. I didn't know you did impressions. That's great. Did you do impressions back in the day, or...?
I don't call it an impression. I get into the character and I become him.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, that's good. What do you got planned for the day? Anything?
Well, I'm going to go on Craigslist to see how my refrigerator is doing. Why did you ask that guy why I can't sell that damn refrigerator? That's an important question to me and millions of other people, for God's sake.
Well, I mean, if he's still out there, maybe you can get him in the elevator and just corner him and make him uncomfortable.
Well, why not? You know?
Say, hey, how about my fridge?
My fridge. I put pictures.
What about those apartments that you've been putting up for rent on there?
You mean the bait and switch thing?
Right. Yeah. You don't look like a Nigerian.
All I want is my $50 non-refundable application fee.
Oh, okay.
That's the important thing.
Wait, hey, are you going to AutoZone later?
AutoZone!
it's like this little puppet machine we've got going with you.
I gotta be
what?
A go bananas later on.
Oh, at bananas in Hasbrook, New Jersey,
yeah,
on Saturday
Hasbrook
the
25th. Heights. Don't forget the Heights.
Hasbrook Heights. You're gonna come down and do the show with me.
You know what I'm gonna do there when I get there?
What?
I'm gonna go bananas.
Do you want to do a guestie?
Sure, I'll do a guestie. Can I do a 3-minute guest set there?
Sure, man.
Maybe you hold the
for you. Yeah, that's Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights in New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. But if you're actually going to say you're going to come, people are going to expect you to go. So if you're just lying and you're playing games, then I'm.
Mudslide's half price during his men are different from women bit.
Do I do? No, I don't do that. You know what? Get out. Go again. I got an obituary to do here. We got sadness on hand here.
Yes.
Anne Bancroft, the legendary stage and screen actress who played Mrs. Robinson in many other roles, is dead at 73. She was the original. Are we going to say she's the original older woman?
Yes.
Yes. It's a sad day. She died of cancer here in New York.
Yes.
We'll be back momentarily to continue our conversation about the top news and. Six past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? Morning Sedition will broadcast live this Friday from New York Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street from 6 to 9. I'll be there. Eric Bogosian will be there. New York City mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields will be there. Comedian Jim David will be there. We're going to talk to some of you, some of the people that work at the Strand. We're going to have free coffee. We're going to give away tickets to see me in New Jersey and give you a ride there. I'll be at the Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. Mark Riley will not be there because he's going to Disney World.
Don't touch me.
You're going to Disney World, buddy.
Yes, I am going to Disney World.
And you're freaking out about everything, right?
Well, I just had this nightmare.
Freaking out about flying, then you had the nightmare.
I got pills. I got pills to take care of my
got,
fly.
Got flying pills?
Well, yeah, they say take a half hour before you fly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's it called? Klonopin?
No, it's called
Quaalude.
Next Stop Orlando.
Xanax?
Yeah.
So you had a bad dream about Disney World.
I had a dream that there was a terror attack on Disney World while my family and I were there.
But the part about the dream that I found kind of interesting is that you were on the air telling us about it.
Well, yeah, I whipped out my cell phone for some unexplained reason.
Yeah.
I called back here, got Chris Lopresto.
Yeah.
And said, okay, we're going to put you on the air. Tell us what's going on down there.
And then what happened? Did you wake up? Or
no,
there was
a bus that had blown up.
Oh, that's awful.
You know, so I'm starting to describe it. I feel like I'm going presiding over the Hindenburg or
something. Just flying dwarves. And
yeah,
Disney
man.
Characters
Mickey,
and,
you know,
and Mickey head.
Whisked by my head.
Oh, no.
It was a scary day. I'm taking it.
Oh.
But now, you know, I don't want to freak my daughter out. She probably listened to it. Vivi, it's okay.
It was a nightmare.
It was a nightmare.
Everybody has nightmares.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all. No, you're going to have a great time. The kids are going to love it.
Yeah, I know.
Vivica's going to have a great time. You're all going to have a good time. All right, so let's get into some news here. General Motors is cutting 25,000 U.S. jobs here because they screwed up, Riley. And you called this. You pulled this piece of news out from a year ago.
From a year ago, January of 2004,
yeah.
When Robert Lutz, mm-hmm. hopefully now unemployed, but then GM's vice president of the product development, said that it didn't make economic sense to put a dual powertrain system, in other words, a hybrid passenger car, mm. on the market. Now, we just had Craig Newmark in here, and what does he drive?
Mm. Hey, a Prius.
Prius.
Yeah.
A hybrid passenger car on the market. Instead, these guys decided to make hybrid Denalis and Escalades.
Right.
And nobody's buying them.
So they took a gamble. Now 25,000 people are out of work. That's going to affect the local economy, certainly of New Jersey across the way. They got a GM plant there. And now
Linden,
And now with Monmouth Base closing, I mean, that's going to take a big toll on that economy. It's going to take a big toll on these people's lives. And it's because this CEO made a gamble.
Well, see, what people need to realize about this is that they're going to put it on on the amount of money that the workers get in their pensions. That's the saddest part of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's all of the UAW negotiated this agreement. Like, you know, the ghost of Walter Reuther held a gun to somebody's head
right.
and made him negotiate this agreement. The UAW is not the reason why General Motors stock is now junk bond status.
It's because someone made a bad business decision.
A series of bad business decisions. They decided that the Denalis and the Escalades and all of these other big SUVs, these gas-guzzling cars that get 5 blocks to the gallon
yeah.
were the wave of the future. And now with gas at 2-something a gallon, people aren't buying them.
You know what scares me is like when I was going over these stories, the first thing I thought about is that you got shareholders who show up for a shareholder meeting. And they care about their stock.
Yes.
So they're like, well, what are we going to do about it? And this guy says, well, we're going to cut 25,000 jobs. And they're like, good, because I don't want my stock to. I mean, how do they dismiss themselves? Or maybe they don't. I don't know. But how do they just, you know, shamelessly or just without a certain amount of empathy cut 25,000 people's jobs?
Because they're not competent enough to build the car that Americans want to buy so that they can build their company back up the way other companies are built up by selling more product.
And now let's talk about this pension issue, because this is another thing that affects working people. Aside from losing their jobs, it seems that many of the nation's private pension plans have been sinking, you know, into an economic pit. These are new figures that 1,108 of the weakest pension plans, those whose assets are at least $50 million below the value of the benefits they promised, were short by an aggregate of $353.7 billion.
That's billion with a B, not million with an M.
So
billion.
So corporations that have private pensions have been lying to their employees about the worth of those pensions, and now the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation that's supposed to guarantee that people get paid no matter what, they're in the hole.
Yeah, and see, here's the amazing thing. You go back a few years, and people never worried about their pensions. People never worried about the solvency of their pensions. They figure, okay, you know, I kick in, my boss kicks in, and when I retire, I'll have a nice little nest egg to live off of in conjunction with my Social Security or whatever else. Now you've got Bush, who wants to pour Social Security money into the same speculative markets that caused part of this pension problem in the first place.
And this is the real crisis. The pension is the real crisis. Social Security is not in a real crisis. And now after Enron, WorldCom, you know, with these corporations that have been cooking the books, you find that many people that head corporations and know about what the status of a pension will not tell their employees, and that's a version of book cooking in and of itself.
Yeah, and these gaps are not going to go away. And, you know, when you start saying to people, to your employees, well, this is the size of our pension fund, and suddenly it turns out that through bad investing or whatever else, what happened to the good old days when, you know, they just took the money and gave it to Jimmy Hoffa and he invested in Vegas?
But yeah, exactly. But this is a climate that the sad thing about this dishonesty on behalf of corporations and about these pensions going broke in a lot of ways has to do with the climate that the Republican administration has created. This is an administration that sympathized first with corporations and then maybe third or fourth with actual human beings, if that.
Well, yeah, and see, the quandary that the administration is in is that they cannot blame this pension crisis on the workers, okay? Now, they can blame, people can attempt to blame the 25,000 GM workers are going to get laid off for their own problem, because that's what they're doing by saying, oh, their pensions are too lavish. But in this situation, the workers did not invest this money. The workers didn't cover up the fact that the stuff was underfunded. These are people who manage the pensions that do this.
Right. And also, doesn't have something to do with the way the new economy is structured, in that if you are outsourcing jobs, none of those workers are going to pay into any sort of pension plan.
No, they're not going to pay into any kind of pension plan. But see, when American business finds that it does not hurt them to outsource and to, you know, put whole divisions of labor outside of this country because there's no tax penalty for doing so, then that's what they're going to do. Business in this country, corporate America, takes the path of least resistance. It's the way the country works.
Talking about least resistance, look at this. Here's another gift to corporate America that was given to the tobacco companies for no real reason at all that anyone can tell other than they could. The Justice Department decided out of the $130 billion that the government was expecting to get from this lawsuit against Big Tobacco for lying to people about the dangers of tobacco and getting an entire generation or three addicted to cigarettes without giving them the real information. Out of the $130 billion that the suit was going after and had all evidence and everything was needed, this was closing the suit. It had it coming. The government had it coming in this racketeering case. They said, just give us $10
billion. $10 billion over 5 years. And again, this is to try and convince more and more Americans, and particularly kids, because remember that the nature of tobacco sales in this country depends in part on getting kids to start smoking. You know, when people are in their 30s and 40s, Mark, generally they don't start smoking.
Yeah, and back in the day, people would just be throwing cigarettes into trick-or-treat bags and stuff. But now they're giving them away, and they're doing the same thing in third world countries. They're doing the same thing. The American tobacco companies, like Philip Morris doesn't even call itself Philip Morris anymore. They're Altria.
Oh, yeah.
And Altria is out there in the third world countries just handing out cigarettes to six-year-olds, you know. That's how they're doing it now. A lot of people in America have smartened up. I smoked for years.
I started when I was 14.
I don't know if they made it attractive to me or whether it was Keith Richards. I don't know who it was.
Wait, what's so funny? You heard Lopresto guffaw when we said we both started so young?
He's probably got something going on in his own head. What are you thinking, Lopresto?
No, I was just thinking it was a competition. Oh, Riley started at 15. Oh, well, I started at 14.
Well, I didn't have sex until I was 17.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So
I was about 15.
I 16.
16?
Yeah.
How was it, though? I mean,
awkward.
Yes.
I couldn't finish, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I had a problem.
I finished too soon.
Yeah, I had no problem finishing.
I didn't know what to do. I was there, and it's like, I don't know what to do. I don't see this ending anytime soon.
This is all very apropos.
That was what you were thinking?
Yeah. And
I don't see this ending anytime soon?
Yeah, so I actually faked it.
Well, you... A male faked orgasm. That's unbelievable.
Wow.
This is a fine way to set up a guest that we're coming up in a few minutes. Chelsea Handler will be here, and she is the author of My Horizontal Life. It seems to me like she's a woman that acts like a dumb guy in terms of sex, which I think is a new twist, and I'm excited to talk to her. And I think we might be getting a call from Future Mark coming up next, so stay with us, 16 past the hour.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, professional wrestler and best-selling author, and you're listening to the two guys who give the right wing the smackdown. It's Mark Maron and Mark Riley with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
On the 90-day trial guarantee. Call 1-877-289-9200. That's 1-877-289-9200.
Going on past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
What is that, Chris?
That's Ben Harper.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Ben Harper's cool.
I like those three chords, no matter who plays them.
You
remember that? There was a live song that did that, too. Lightning, what is it called?
Lightning Crashes.
Yeah, that's the same chords, isn't it? Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
Same chords as Night Moves by Bob Seger. It's just one of those weird sort of rock ballad chords. Anyway, Morning Sedition will broadcast live. I will be there. Riley's going to be in Disney World Friday from New York Strand Bookstore. We'll have actor Eric Bogosian, mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields, comic Jim David. We'll be giving away T-shirts, keychains, tickets to my performance in Hasbrook, New Jersey on June 25th.
Hasbrook Heights, banned from the state.
Go to bananascomedyclub.com if you want to get ticket information. Get podcast Morning Edition every day. You can go to morningsedition.com for that. But the Strand's going to be fun, man, because other people are going to be stopping by. Who knows? Maybe some surprise guests. We got Lawton Smalls is going to be there. You know.
Yeah.
What's up, Chris?
Sorry to interrupt you, but Future Mark's on line one.
Me? Cool. Put him through.
Hey, buddy. What's up?
Hey, buddy. What's up?
I'm on vacation, man.
Cool. Where are you?
In my apartment.
So you didn't go anywhere?
Well, in 2050, it's more like any when. You know how I'm here and you're there?
Uh-huh.
I'm also on vacation 50 years from now.
Whoa. How did that work?
Pretty simple. I just strapped myself into this vinyl trip harness.
A trip harness, huh? Wow, they're I think, you know, I'd like to have one of those. There are times where I could definitely use a trip harness, I think.
Well, yeah, it feels kind of, you know, trippy. So you can just punch a date in, and then you're time traveling.
Okay, wait. All right. So there's like a future Mark, and we're on vacation right now?
Yeah. You want to talk to him? I can get him on speakerphone.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Hey, buddy, what's up? Dude, you sound kind of funny.
Yeah, well,
That's because in 2105, everything's been miniaturized.
Oh.
People, buildings, everything except food and oil, you know, natural resources. Mm. They figured the way to make it last was to make everyone, you know, really tiny. It works. A gallon of gas will last me about a year.
Hey, future Mark. Tell Mark how tall you are. Go on, tell him.
I'm 1'9".
Oh.
I got it where it counts. You know what I mean. Little joke.
So what happened to make this whole miniaturizing thing necessary?
The ecological holocaust, mostly. Ice caps melted, hurricanes, tsunamis. The U.S. kind of crumbled like a big cookie. Most everybody died.
Dude, that's not funny.
It was pretty funny. You had to see it, I guess.
So, wait, now if the U.S. crumbled like a big cookie, where are you?
I'm on the beach.
That's cool.
Tell Mark where the beach is, future Mark. This is going to kill him.
Montana. Technically, the kingdom of Montana.
Dude.
Yeah, all that's left of America is Montana, Arkansas, parts of Louisiana.
Really?
Now you know why we have to be this small.
So, what's it like being small?
That's pretty cool. It takes like a month to finish a beer. The only real problem are the cats.
Wait, you didn't shrink the cats?
The floods got all of them except for two, and now they hunt us. speaking of the devil, I gotta go find a hole to hide in. All right, see you in a week, future Mark.
Wait, whoa, future Mark. Aren't you going to warn me about something?
Cool, future Mark. Future Mark does that for you, too?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, buy property in Montana. You only need to buy about a square foot. You'll be a king. Later. I really got to get out of here.
Okay, later. Hey, Mark, I got to go, too. This harness is starting to ride up a little bit.
Whoa, wait. Aren't you going to warn me about something?
Dude, the strap is going right up my crack. Maybe next week.
Okay, later, man.
Ow. All right, later.
Oh, no. It keeps getting... Wow, the future is an exciting place, man.
Our next guest has just left the building.
Oh, wow. Oh, look at this, Riley.
Where?
What is this? Representative Catherine Harris announced Tuesday that she's going to run for Senate in Florida.
Oh, man.
Boy, I wonder if she's going to fix that election, too.
Yeah, probably.
I can't stand the fact that woman is even existing in the political world or even existing on this planet anymore. What a heinous criminal. A criminal against the state. My friend,
you know, she's failed upwards since 2000. You know, she was what was she, the Secretary of State? Then she becomes a congresswoman, and now she's going to run for the Senate.
Well,
she's going to run against Nelson.
Well, that's one of those things. It's like she made her bones. You know what I mean? Now it's like when someone goes to jail and doesn't rat people out.
Yeah.
When they get out, they get taken care of. She did this horrendous thing, you know, for the Republicans. She facilitated an electoral fraud
mm-hmm.
on a massive level. She was, you know, almost probably 90% responsible for getting George Bush in office the first time on, you know, based on a lie,
yeah.
on fraudulent information, on, you know, bad numbers, everything. And she facilitated all of it.
How does someone who has done so much to disenfranchise voters, how can she manage to be elected dog catcher of a small Florida town, much less have the nads to run for the Senate?
It seems like it's all rigged, Riley, certainly down there in Florida just about. Do you think she could win this thing? What do you know about Bill Nelson?
Well, I mean, you know, Nelson is one of those guys who that's who she's running against. Some people feel that he's vulnerable. And,
yeah.
you know, she's got name recognition, if nothing else, in the state of Florida. So, you know, they probably figure she's got a good shot. As long as she doesn't have to spend a lot of money in a costly primary against someone else. Jeb Bush is not running. That's very clear. He's not running for the Senate. He's not running for president. He's just going to stay where he is, at least for the short term. So it looks as though, at this point, that she may have the field pretty much to herself.
Wow. Well, that's scary. I don't want to see her in power in any way.
She represents the radical right, folks. Those of you who live in Florida, those of you who are listening to us, she is the face of the radical right.
She represents the criminal right, and she's
yeah.
also a hero of the right's base. I mean, they're going to owe her forever.
Yeah. George W. still saying thanks.
My Horizontal Life is the name of a book, a collection of one-night stands. The author of that book, who is also on Oxygen Network's Girls Behaving Badly, will be with us momentarily.
One of my wife's favorite shows.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, well, Chelsea Handler is going to be here next.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Secure the ammunition dumps. It just goes on and on.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's a morning's edition on Air America Radio. I'll be at the Strand Bookstore this Friday at the corner of 12th Street and Broadway from 6 to 9, hosting the show without my friend Mark Riley.
I won't be
We'll be in Disney World, but we're going to have Eric Bogosian. We're going to have Jim David will be there. He's funny.
Yeah.
Southern gay man.
Southern gay.
A southern gay man comedian. Very
the only
funny.
One?
No, I'm sure there's more. I will be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. Go to bananascomedyclub.com, and you can win two tickets and transportation at the Strand to see me in New Jersey. What would a New Yorker want more than that? A Manhattanite than to win tickets to go to New Jersey to see me talk about me.
Mm.
Right now, in the studio, we're pleased to have actress and comedian Chelsea Handler. She's one of the stars of Oxygen Network's Girls Behaving Badly and is the author of this book I'm holding in my hand right now, Horizontal Life, My Horizontal Life, a collection of one-night stands. Good morning, Chelsea. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, boy?
We're very good.
All right.
So, I never knew that there were women that were proud of having one-night stands, and this is a...
That's right.
I knew you were out there, because I've had several, so they must be out there.
Several, Mark?
Well, in the old days.
Right.
Yeah, no, I had to.
Back in the day.
Back when I was married to my first wife. Anyway, is that bad?
Old school, huh?
So how many married guys have you slept with on
the one-night stand? No, I don't sleep with married guys. What are you talking about?
Oh, really? So how many, are you proud of your one-night stands? Obviously, you wrote a book
about
it.
I've been living in L.A. for 10 years, and I was, in my 20s and having a lot of fun, and a lot of girls, I just got so annoyed with these girls that pretend they're not doing it, that are, shy and say, oh, no, nothing happened, and then, mm-hmm. 3 weeks later, you find out she got, double-teamed or something. Like, I hate that stuff. It's like, we're doing it. There's nothing wrong with it if you're single and you're not married yet. You're out there having fun, and I had so many funny stories that I figure I think I should write a book.
So what's the best one? What was the best one night stand you had?
Well, the funniest story in the book, mm-hmm. I think, is the story when I hooked up with a midget in Mexico.
Wow.
It wasn't on purpose. He was a tricky little guy.
Was it part of a show?
It wasn't. It might be a show after this book is out. It might be a show.
Yeah.
But
you got his number? Then you kept him?
I think he got my number, uh-huh. unfortunately, and called me continuously for months thereafter. But, I think that, there's a lot of good, stories in there. But
let's talk about the midget.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about midgets is this is my problem. I have a very grand affinity for midgets. A lot of people are scared of them, like they have phobias, like they do for snakes or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel the opposite. I see them, I want to hold them down and cuddle them because uh-huh. they're so cute, little guys.
Yeah.
But you have to respect them. You can't just, pick them up. You have to ask first, and some of those guys are heavy. You really have to respect them. And I just love them. Like, you could never get mad at one, uh-huh. They're so cute. Uh-huh. What did you do, get in an argument and pick them up and throw them in the microwave like a little shrinky dink. Who's your mommy now?
I can tell you have a lot of respect for midgets.
Yeah, I do. I respect them. I want to get one.
Yes. Lord.
Mostly for the carpool lane, but I would also play with him a lot.
Uh-huh. But you actually did have sex with a midget.
No. Okay, we hooked up. Luckily, I drank too much tequila that night.
A little vague.
Well, if you read the book, you'll find out exactly what happened, Mark.
Okay.
But no, we didn't actually consummate our relationship.
Okay.
We just hooked up, and it got pretty wild. He was in my hotel room the morning when I woke up.
Mm-hmm.
I heard his little feet pitter-patter to the bathroom, and I didn't know exactly what had happened. So.
You get so much mail from offended little people.
Little people.
Yeah, little people. That's a correction. Change everything I just said to little people.
Yeah, yeah.
They like that better.
Yeah, you're about getting yourself one. Now, that's a good question. Hooking up, that's a pretty broad thing. That could mean what?
Well, it can mean anything from making out to, oral sex to fooling around, just, rolling around. Anything but penetration.
Okay, so it goes all the way up to that. That's what hooking up
mm-hmm.
means.
Yeah.
And then
have you ever hooked up before?
Yeah, obviously. But I just, that's a fairly new phrase. It wasn't around when I was
hooking up,
was it? Not really.
Oh, okay.
Was it around when you were hooking up?
It meant something different.
It did. It did,
yeah.
Actually. It was
it
was a drug reference.
It was a drug reference.
It wasn't actually was a drug. Yeah.
What did it mean?
Can you hook me up?
It means boring.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
Can you hook me up with some drugs?
Yeah, can you hook me up?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We must just be from different generations.
Absolutely.
I didn't realize.
So let's talk about this. I was told that, let's talk about this gynecological episode.
Oh, that was a good one. In the book, I talk about how this my girlfriend met this gynecologist, and he was, like, smoking hot. And he said, you know, Chelsea, I was single, and she knew that I was good to go for hooking up with people.
Yeah.
Or whatever we're calling it now. And so she set me up with this guy. She goes, you have to go in and you have to see this guy. Mm-hmm. He's my gynecologist. He's gorgeous. He's beautiful. I'm like, oh, my God, perfect. A hot guy who also knows his way around, you know, female genitalia.
Uh-huh.
So I went in for my pap smear that I had had 2 weeks prior. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was like, let's get things off to a good start right away.
Yeah.
So I went in for an exam with this new gynecologist and made a complete ass out of myself, which I'm prone to do more often than not. And so we ended up talking, and he was going to a regatta, this like regatta in Catalina that weekend. So I was like, oh, cool. I'm like, yeah, I love boating. Meanwhile, I haven't been on a boat, I don't think ever, except for like a Carnival cruise, unfortunately. So I ended up, he's like, yeah, my partner and I are going to Catalina for the weekend. You want to bring one of your girlfriends? I'm like, oh, my God, this is like the easiest thing I've ever accomplished. My girlfriend is going to be worshiping me when I tell her. I'm like, yeah, not only did I go in and we're going out on a date, we're going away for the weekend, sister.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, I come to find out on the sailboat that we went on with him, that I told him I knew how to sail, that he, when he said his partner, he meant his lover.
Uh-huh.
And I walked in on him with getting it from behind from his partner.
Ooh, how was that for you?
Yeah, it was pretty disenchanting. Also added the fact that I was loaded on ecstasy at the time.
So it was
a real downer.
You think you're going to hook up, and you walk in, and these two men having sex, and then you jumped off the boat?
Basically swam to shore, and I was stuck on Catalina Island at a swing dancing convention
on
for the weekend.
On ecstasy.
Yeah, on ecstasy.
Mm.
Well, luckily, I wasn't alone. I was with my girlfriend, though. So, yeah, things aren't working out too hot for me in that book.
I got a question.
One disaster after another.
You hooked up with a bushy?
A bushy?
Yeah.
What is that code for?
Somebody who worked in the Bush administration.
You figured that right out.
Oh, wow. I'm like, I forgot my own book. Yeah, I did.
Wow. How many one-night stands have you had?
I've had a lot.
Now, tell us about this guy from the Bush administration.
Well, it's so funny because you meet these guys. Like, you know, this guy was an attorney for the government. He prosecuted terrorists. I was, like, so turned on by that until I realized that meant he was a Republican. I was like, what? I'm like, where? He's like, well, I'm registered as a Republican, but I don't always vote that way. I'm like, all right, well, let's get this party started. So we were hanging out in Seattle.
That was enough?
Yeah. As long as he told me that sometimes you vote a Democrat, I was like, okay, we can seal this deal. So we ended up hanging out. We went out
to
dinner
in
Seattle.
Okay, this is a hanging out.
Hanging out, hooking up.
It's very Gen X.
does
that cover sexual intercourse or
not? No, the hanging out.
Pre-hooking up.
Yeah.
You hang out, then you hook up, and then maybe you seal the deal.
Okay. There's a lot of lingo flying around
here.
You're
hanging out with the bushy.
So we were hanging out, and you know that look people get. First of all, we all went out to dinner, a big group of us. We were filming Girls Behaving Badly in Seattle, so we were all out, you know, a bunch of us. And then we get back to the hotel. My girlfriend, Shaniqua, in the book, is my very good wing woman. She's always trying to hook me up, and she does a very good job at it. So she put in the effort with him and pretty much talked to him the whole night, thankfully, so I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get back to the hotel room, and you know that look people give you when they're on cocaine? Like,
mouth-jaw thing. The weird grinding.
Yeah, that. Like, I came out of the bathroom all ready to get things going, and I saw that look on his face.
His eyes are all buggy, and he's working his jaw.
Yeah, he's like that jaw move, which is such a gross thing. I don't know why anybody ever does cocaine if you look like that after. It's like, are you having a good time?
And what happened?
So I was like, are you on coke right now? Because I had seen that look plenty of times.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I just did a lot. I just did a little. And I'm like, well, is this going to affect your performance?
Oh,
and he's like, no, I should be fine. Sure enough, it affected his performance in a major way. We didn't. I mean, I put in a lot of time into this guy, like 2 hours.
Wow.
I didn't have time to be, like, you know, messing around trying to get...
To put another 2 hours in.
I have to catch a flight in the morning. It's like, I mean, it was a... And then the next morning, my girlfriend's like, how'd that work out for you? All excited. Like, she had closed, you know, she had worked so hard for me. I'm like, how'd that work out for me? Let me tell you something. Not so hot.
Yeah, he was crying. It was 4 in the morning.
I literally rolled over. I'm like, just go.
Oh.
I'm like, just go home.
Wow.
He's like, can I call you in L.A.? I'd love to make it up to you. I'm like, no, you're a mess. Why? You work for the government. You're just snorting lines? Like, on a Tuesday night? I don't think so.
Wow.
At least wait till the weekend.
So now you heard the immortal, that never happens to me line?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, yeah, that never happens to me. I love that line.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this has never happened to you either, then. Bye.
Get
see
out,
you later.
Drug fiends.
Let me show you a couple other things that are going to start happening a lot.
It's
a,
you know what's ironic about this is that the Bush people accused all the Clinton people of being the cokeheads.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Isn't it so funny? I'm like, I don't understand how people can function. How can you be an attorney for the government and be just like... and these, like, actors and all these people that are, you know, have to perform all the time. How can you be coked to the gills and then do your job?
Well, you know, it's weird. I always used to think that, too, when I, like, watch some older comics that I know that were on
right.
coke at the time. And if you watch some of them now, in, like, in their HBO specials, you can tell. I mean, they're not
really?
Really. Yeah, sometimes. I think you can, yeah.
Well, I mean, you would think it would be hard to perform without it then, right?
Some yeah, there used to be a guy that used to wander around the Comedy Store, and he'd come up to me and go, was I on yet? Like, he was literally so high. No, there you go.
I drink before I go on all the time. Some people don't drink at all.
Yeah.
I drink. Oh, I always drink.
Yeah.
I make it a priority.
Do you want to go to a meeting or?
No, AA is for quitters. Okay.
Yeah, sure. You keep saying that. Well, now tell us about the show because I'd never seen the show.
Girls Behaving Bad. It's a hidden camera show. We just did 4 seasons. It's on the Oxygen Network. It just got syndicated, so it's like in a bunch, 85 million households now.
Oh.
And they're doing another season. But
it's a prank show?
No, huh? That's good. I like that.
And you're going to be at Caroline's this weekend?
Caroline's tomorrow night. June 9th, 10 o'clock
today's
show.
Wednesday.
I'm doing one show tomorrow night at
on
Caroline's,
Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay, and the book is My Horizontal Life, a collection of one-night stands. Chelsea Handler, thanks for being with us. Nice talking to you.
Thanks, you guys.
All right, take care. We'll be back momentarily. Actually, we're not going to go anywhere. We're just going to sit here in the studio and talk some more. What do we got coming up? Closing comments?
Closing
more
comments.
News.
Do we have Cliff Notes?
Sure, we got Cliff Notes.
Hey,
46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York's 8th District, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Steal right now for a free quote. 800-708-3095, 800-708-3095.
Hey, it's 50 past the hour. Glad to sing. Those of you who are still with us. Air America Radio's
little
morning
people
tradition.
Everywhere.
It got kind of filthy in here for a little while, didn't it? Very exciting to have a dirty girl on the show.
Yeah.
In a way. Mm-hmm.
In a clean way.
Yeah. You know, the book, you read the book, whatever. Hey, whatever.
Yeah. Read the book. It's a good book.
What's that? Let's do an uplifting story, a very interesting story this is. This is about a college student whose younger sister was murdered a decade ago. This guy, Zach Osborne, was like 6 years old when his sister got raped and murdered by their mother's boyfriend, who's in prison on death row. And on Tuesday, Osborne, who is now 19, received a $5,000 college scholarship from a group of death row inmates. If I'm understanding this properly,
yes.
Who put out a bimonthly publication called Compassion. Apparently, they've given out like 7 scholarships worth about $27,000. And this is interesting because they want, you know, Zach Osborne wants to be a police officer.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, by the way, seems to be in favor of capital punishment, certainly in terms of this guy, Jeff Candies, who was his sister's murderer.
Right.
Who's on death row.
Yeah, it was an interesting ending because he doesn't say he's pro capital punishment, but he's pro justice. And in this case, he says that this is what he's been sentenced to. And you could understand that, I guess, on some level.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you lose a sister at a younger age. This was his younger sister. I mean, the child was 4 years old. So I don't know what kind of beast. I, you know, again, remain opposed to the death penalty under any circumstances. I think the guy should live the rest of his miserable life behind bars.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, he is actually close to an execution date,
mm-hmm.
this guy Jeff Candies. But Zach Osborne is now going to be the beneficiary. What I find surprising about this, Mark, is that a group of death row inmates are actually able to put together a network of people to put out a newsletter.
Well, I guess it's sponsored by the Roman Catholic Church. They contribute artwork, essays, and poetry to this book, Compassion. I guess what this is really doing, it seems, is making these guys, you know, engage in something constructive in the community of trying to put. I don't, obviously, they're not up for rehabilitation because they are on death row, but they are, I guess, trying to give back with the guidance of this group to give back to the community, and certainly this idea of a scholarship for, you know, it's obviously not going to make up for the kid's sister being killed, but it's good that these guys aren't just, you know, completely, because you always assume people on death row are just these sociopathic idiots, which they are, but a lot of them are trying to make up for something, to do something decent.
Well, I mean, this young man, Zach Osborne, wants to be a cop. He wants to be in law enforcement.
It's a very ironic kind of weird story that, you know, these guys who are on death row for murdering people are giving scholarships to guys who want to be cops.
Yeah, and I mean, at a point, I guess there's something that works about that, certainly in terms of perhaps people looking at death row inmates a little bit differently. Now, you know, you can not under any circumstances, liberals get tarred with this brush all the time. Well, you know, you're in favor of, you know, coddling these people. It's not really about that. I mean, if they can do some good, let them do some good.
Yeah. And but you know our president George Bush didn't let what's her name
Carla Faye Tucker
do any good after she had started ministries in prison and completely turned her ideology around and her life around and actually was you know presenting doing a lot of people good in terms of reaching out in the prison community yet he still just sort of
said well God bless
and then he made
Carla
fun
Faye
of her.
Tucker yeah yeah that, you know there's some back and forth about that but I remember the reports at the time and it seemed pretty clear cut that he was mocking them
yeah so I'm going to be hosting this show solo on Friday at the Strand Bookstore here on the corner of Broadway and 12th in New York City from 6 to 9 a.m. We'll have playwright and actor Eric Bogosian. We'll have a New York City mayoral candidate Steve Virginia Fields. We'll have comic and columnist Jim David. We'll be giving away free coffee and we'll have some food there and we'll have some T-shirts, and we're going to have a raffle to give away some tickets to go to New Jersey,
yeah.
Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, to see me at Bananas Comedy Club June 25th. You can go to bananascomedyclub.com if you want ticket info. You can podcast Morning's Edition and take the show with you every day if you go to morningsedition.com for details. For those of you who are just tuning in here or missed some of the show, here are a few highlights. This is what we like to call Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. Why am I stumbling over myself all of a sudden, Chris? You know, I have a half a cup of Starbucks coffee, half a cup, and I can no longer connect thoughts properly.
So it's no longer alcohol, it's coffee.
No, this is my first cup of coffee. Can I have one cup of coffee? Do you know my hours? You're on these hours. You're up earlier than me.
Yeah.
What do you got to take a shot at me for?
I have a nice Dr. Pepper.
General Motors plans to cut 25,000 jobs. GM Chairman G. Richard Wagner Jr. said the closings and job cuts should save about $2.5 billion a year. Wagner added, quote, it was either that or eliminate my job. But then who would announce stuff like this? I sided with important announcements, end quote. President Bush's advisor suggested he never apologize to Muslims. Besides sending the president the John Wayne movie, she wore a yellow ribbon to pattern himself after. Bush advisors also sent the Nazi documentary Mein Kampf, which Bush called the feel-good movie of the summer.
Ooh.
Bush said, when it comes to North Korea, I got another movie line ready for them, too. Don't worry, Jake. It's only Chinatown. Mayor Michael Bloomberg says New York's failure to secure a West Side Stadium, quote, let America down. I don't know how we're going to face all those disappointed kids in Alabama and Idaho and New Mexico. What have we done? What have we done? As a partial substitute for having the Olympics, New York officials may instead just paint a giant target on Manhattan. Many New York City residents were not eager to host the Olympics. Some said if they wanted to see people from all over the world compete, they would just throw a 20 on the floor of the F train. Today's phrase just dropped this in the conversation. So GM is cutting 25,000 jobs, huh? The only manufacturing job left in this country is to manufacture wealth for the ruling classes. Wake up, sheeple. Blue collars are being replaced by slave collars, my friend.
Wow.
There you go. Gary Sinise is going to be in here tomorrow.
Gary Sinise and Johnny K Street.
Of course.
Of course. And another episode of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom, all for you tomorrow. Maron, great show today.
You too, Riley.
Air America Radio.